If you got a Bible, and I hope you do, we're going to end up in 1 Samuel chapter 8. So, and going on from there, maybe a couple other verses that we're going along. But 1 Samuel chapter 8, if you don't know where that is, the table of contents is your friend. So just look in the beginning, it'll tell you where 1 Samuel starts, and you go up to chapter 8. We'll get there in a little bit, but first, I am so excited to be here. How many of you guys are here for the first time? I didn't know if somebody already asked you that, but first time you're here? Really? That's incredible, you guys. I just love it. Me and my wife love coming up here. In fact, my wife, Sherry, you can't see her in the balcony, but she's awesome. She's sitting right in the back right there. Sherry, just stand up. Just at least people down here can see. Just say hi, Sherry. So. Hi, Sherry. I'll talk to you after this, okay? So, she's awesome. So, but I wanted you to maybe get to know us. I hope that that I wouldn't just be a speaker, just come up here and just give a talk, you know, at night or whatever else. And, you know, you see me once a day or something like that. But I really do want to be available to you. So maybe me or Sherry or both of us or one of us will be walking around in the afternoons. And if you see us during free time and you want to come up and say hi or see one of us say hi, we would love that. And we just want to get to know you and have you get to know us. So I even you guys, I'm going to try to come maybe by some cabins or something at night. And maybe if it's not too scary, maybe come in and say hi. And because sometimes it's really scary with some of the guys' cabins. But anyway, but I will do that. But I just thought, you know, just to begin this morning, before we get into anything, for you to just get to know me just a little bit. And you guys know the saying, a picture's worth a thousand words, right? So I just thought I'd show you a picture, my graduation picture, my high school graduation picture. Go for it. You got it right there. So, wow, somebody whistled. That was, man. Wow. Okay, well, thank you. Anyway, so this is my high school graduation picture. Yeah, guys, honestly, okay, I know a couple things you got to be thinking right now. You're like, wow, that's quite a tux. So a couple things. I'm not smiling. I have no idea why I'm not smiling. Maybe I thought I was running for president or something like that. So in the 1800s. So anyway, so, but because that tux, they had a choice in the high school I was in. There for the guys, they had a choice of wearing a brown tux or a baby blue tux. And I chose the brown tux because my eyes were brown. That's the only reason I thought about having a brown tux. And that tux is actually not real. When I say not real, it's like a faux tux. So, which means behind that, there's nothing on my back. All of that is just draped over me in the front. And then they had clips on the back and clips on the back down here. And so that everybody that wanted to have the brown tux is wearing the exact same brown tux. Everything is glued together in the front. So that's the tux. And that's the one I chose to wear. And so there I am. So right now, just by me showing you a picture, you know, worth a thousand words, you can go, oh, PJ, I kind of know a little bit about you. But I will allow you to ask me some questions. I just want to maybe just open it up for some questions to ask me anything you want about my life. But there's just a couple rules. One is, I don't think this is going to happen, but if you ask me something that's not really appropriate to answer right out here in front of everybody, I'll say, hey, maybe we'll talk about it later, or, you know, I don't have an answer for that. But I'm going to try to answer every question that you have. But the second one is more important, and that's this, that you would ask me something about when I was in high school. So if you say, hey, PJ, do you and Sherry have any kids? I'll say, no, I did not have any kids in high school. Okay, it's not about now, it's about when I was in high school. So there's basically five sections here. There's like this section where it kind of turns this way, then you got this section facing front, then you got this section facing front, then you got this section that's kind of turned sideways, and then we'll have the balcony. I won't forget about you guys up there. And yeah, I won't forget about you. So if you have a question, just say, PJ, I got a question about you. Ask me anything about when I was in high school, I would give my best shot at answering it. How about this section first, the one that's kind of, yes. Was me and Sherry sweethearts in high school? I wish that was true, but that's no, we weren't. Sherry and I met actually when I was a senior in college, and she was a freshman in college. That's what we met. So we did not know each other. We weren't even in the same town or anything else. We went to the same college in San Diego, but that's where we met. So I met her halfway through the year. And there's a story in that I would love to tell you sometime offline. But in high school, I had no girlfriends in high school. I want to tell you I had one, but that would be a lie. So I did not have a girlfriend at all in high school. I was scared to death of girls. Some of you might go, "Oh, PJ, you're that guy." But some of you actually might go, "Oh, I can relate." You know, girls were scary, man. So I really wanted to have a girlfriend, but I didn't know how to act or anything else. I think God was kind of saving me because I would not have done anything that God would wanted me to do as a boyfriend, for sure. I did not understand what that was about at all. So, but my first girlfriend was when I was a freshman in college. She was in high school. That was my first girlfriend. And we got together on a Friday night, or Saturday night, right before, and I don't know what I think about camps, because I love speaking at camps and this kind of stuff, but I have a bad taste about camp, because she went to a camp right after we got together. And she came back, she met a guy at camp, and she dumped me when she got back from camp. So we were together for a week, and we weren't even together for the week. You know? And so she got back and dumped me. That was my first girlfriend. My second girlfriend was Sherry. That was my second girlfriend when I was a senior, and of course she ended up marrying me. So that was it. So yeah, that's okay. Question here. That's gonna be why did not any girls like you? Okay, no. Anyway, you got one? Yeah.
Do you have any big spiritual struggles in high school?
Who are you? What are you? Like. Did you have a girlfriend? Did you have any big spiritual struggles in high school? Yes, I did. I'm going to be very, very honest with you. I probably was later on in high school, I'm going to be honest, was when I was first exposed to pornography. And that was a struggle that I would say has haunted me my entire life. And we're going to talk about being enslaved to sin this week, and that was definitely, you know, that's one of those ones that I think any of us who struggle with pornography, if we're being honest, we understand how much it enslaves us. That was a struggle that I can think of right now that I remember the first time. It didn't go away either. It's like, oh, it's going to go away when I get a girlfriend, or it's going to go away when I get married. It's going to go away, you know, oh, I'll grow out of it. Oh, man, lies, total lies. And I remember the time that I, after being married to Sherry for years, was finally so sick of it that I finally had to tell someone, and I told the person that was the hardest person to tell, and that was my wife, Sherry. And I knew that she was going to leave me. I knew it. And she didn't, and I'm really happy about that. I'm really humbled by that, and to walk with me through it. But I got to tell you, you know what? I for a long time, it was like, God, do anything in my life, but don't make me have to tell somebody that I'm struggling with this, anything but that. And yet, that's exactly what we need to do. So when we're struggling with a spiritual struggle, probably the biggest thing I would tell you, this isn't even part of, by the way, I'm not teaching yet, just letting you know. I would tell any of us, man, if you're struggling with something, the biggest thing you're going to be able to do is to let somebody else in on it who can walk with you through it. That's the biggest thing. So that we don't do. We go, okay, it's God, but God says, you're not meant to do this alone. So with any struggle that you have. So, well, that was one of the serious, now it's like, hey, what was your favorite color? So that was the serious question, seriously. What about you guys? It doesn't have to be that serious. It can be serious, can be not. So, question you got, yes.
One of my most embarrassing moments
in high school, yeah. My whole high school was an embarrassing moment. And seriously, you guys got to know what kind of person I was. I was a sophomore in high school when I finally decided to take a shower every day. Now, you know the guy that I am? You know who I am, right? I was the guy with my friends. I got straight A's and stuff, but man, my hair was pretty greasy. And man, I was the guy with my friends in the library playing Dungeons and Dragons. Okay, yeah, that's it. Hey, see, I'm your, so you're like, hey, all right, so there you go. I'm that guy. So that was me. You know, I was, hey, what sport did you play? Chess. So, you know, that's it, you know. So that's kind of what I was. Now, I do like a lot of sports and stuff, but I was in the chess club. But that's kind of what I was. So a lot of it was like looking back, like pretty embarrassing. I do remember one time with the girl thing, it was pretty embarrassing. I had liked this girl in high school. I was so in love with her. Her name was Julie. She was in our youth group. Sorry, Sherry, but it's Julie. And Julie was the person I really, really liked. And of course, I was too scared to ever, you know, do anything with it and stuff. But I remember we would go to this skate track. It was called Cal Skate. And we would go to this skating thing, you know. When I was in high school, you know, skating was like this popular thing, going to skating rinks and stuff like that. And I'm talking about rollerblades, talking about the four-wheel skates, you know, and stuff. So we were skating. And at the end of this skate night, this Christian skate night, they would always have this one last song where it would be like couple skates, you know. And so you could ask somebody to skate with you. I would never, ever would ask anybody. I would dream of asking Julie. And she came up to me one night because she was so nice. This is why I liked her. She was so nice. And she says, do you want to skate together? And I went, okay. And so we're skating, and you know, the disco ball is going, and they got the lights down and stuff, and there's this twinkling stuff. And you know, you got Michael W. Smith, Friends Are Friends Forever, you know, playing stuff. Yeah. And so we're skating around this thing, and the whole time I'm just thinking, please don't sweat. Please don't sweat. And of course, when I'm thinking that, all I'm doing is I'm just sweating, you know. And I finished the whole thing, and my palms were sweating so bad, just holding her hand. And I finished, and I walk it away, and then I turn around, and I see her walking away, and she's doing this. That was pretty embarrassing. Okay, that was. Now some of you guys are like feeling all sorry for me and everything. You're like, oh, that's good. Did I ask this section yet? Okay, what is it? What was the career I wanted to be when I was in high school? I wanted to be a paleontologist. Yep, paleontologist. Like every second grade guy likes dinosaurs, and I never grew out of it. I still like, I'm a junior in high school. Hey, what are you doing? And I'm just looking at these brontosauruses and stuff. This thing is really awesome. So I got my little toy dinosaurs on my desk. You know, like, I love dinosaurs. So I wanted to be a paleontologist, you know, go up and dig up dinosaurs and stuff. And I went to college to do that. And then I discovered in college that I would rather be around living people than dead animals. So that's kind of what I kind of discovered in college. Changed my major a couple of times. Ended up, I never ever thought I'd be ending up speaking in front of people and stuff like that for sure. But that's the plan that God had. But my plan was totally different, and He changed it. So, one question from the balcony. Yes, you raise your hand fast. When and why did I accept Christ? You and this girl should just really get together. You guys got the serious questions, which is really good. I'm so glad you asked that, actually. I really am glad you asked that. When and why did I accept Christ? Maybe kind of going, in high school, did I accept Christ? You know, maybe I could do it that way. You know, was I a Christian in high school? If you asked me in high school, hey, are you a follower of Jesus? Are you a Christian? I would have said yes. Get this. I would have said yes. I would not have been lying to you. And I would have been wrong. You know what I'm saying by that? Like, some people might say, hey, I'm around these people. Hey, are you a Christian? I'm not going to tell them I'm not because, you know, I don't want to deal with, you know, all of them, you know, this group of people telling me about Jesus. You know, yeah, I'm a Christian. Yeah, I'm fine. And some people know they're lying. I would say yes because I really thought I was right with God. I really thought that I was a Christian. And I would have been wrong. One reason why I'm passionate about what I do, you guys, is because of this verse in Luke where Jesus actually tells people, he goes, there's going to be not just a few people, he says many, a lot of people that are going to stand in front of me one day and they're going to say, Lord, Lord, and I'm going to turn around and say, I don't know who you are. Depart from me. In other words, people are going to be in front of Jesus saying, I know who you are. You're Lord. Oh, you're Jesus. I get it. I learned all about you, everything about you. I believe about you. And Jesus is going to go, but we didn't have a relationship. Because it's not about just believing certain truths about me. It's about entering into a relationship with me. The whole time, when I was 5 years old, I prayed the prayer thing. I was in Sunday school. Maybe you guys can relate. You know, I heard about Jesus, heard about hell, heard about heaven. And it's like, hey, who wants to go to hell? And I'm like, who wants to do that? Burn forever and be in pain? You know, I don't want to do that. Who wants to go to heaven? Oh, streets of gold? That's great. And who wants Jesus? Oh, Jesus died for me? Okay, pray this prayer. I prayed this prayer. And then I went, okay, I'm good. And then I looked at myself, along with some of the other friends who also prayed the prayer, and then also was like, I believe all the stuff about Jesus when I read the Bible. You know, I kept going to church. I learned more. Oh, he's God. He died for my sins. He was buried. He rose from the dead. I believed all of this stuff about Jesus, along with some other people. And then there was the super Christians, and honestly, Julie was one of them. That's why I admired her so much, because she was for real. And I looked at her, and I went, she's got like the super Christian, the one that's going to become a missionary or something someday. You know, the ones that are really like radical. But I'm still okay. And maybe one day I'll like become totally committed. And then I did something that, man, it changed my life. I actually started reading the Bible. I actually started reading the Gospels, where Jesus was asked, how do I get eternal life? And he didn't say, pray this prayer. And he didn't say, believe that I'm going to die for you and be buried and rise from the dead. He didn't even say that. That is what he did, and we're going to find out why he had to do that in order for us to be made right with him. But he said, man, I want you to believe in me. And that little word in, and we'll talk about it maybe later on this week, the little word in is the biggest little word I've ever seen in my life. Because all those years, and in high school, I believed everything about Jesus. Everything. But I never put my faith in Jesus. And probably a lot of you know who I actually believed in. I believed everything about Jesus, but who did I believe in? Yourself. Like people you know. I believed in me. I believed everything about him. And I thought I could just do that. And I found out that wasn't the case. I was a freshman in college when I finally handed my life over to Jesus and became a follower of Jesus. So that's answering that one. And also, I think about King Saul. When I think about this, go ahead and go into 1 Samuel chapter 8, and I think about the Israelites, and I think about, you know what? This is a guy, and this is a group of people who believe all this stuff about, and we're going to, you know, Theos is what he's called in this presentation for the week, but all these people believed in Theos, all these people who believed about, they would say they believe in him, but what they meant was they believed everything about him. And even Saul, King Saul, that he knew who God was. You're going to find out this week that King Saul actually did things for God. He actually sacrificed stuff to God. He would build a monument for God. I mean, he would talk about God. He would praise God. He would do like what we did this morning and do this time of worship to God. And yet, I think we find him the same way as me. He believed all the stuff about him, but the entire time, he would never really truly put his faith in Theos, in God. And it changes everything. And that verse I was telling you about with Luke, you guys, where he says, hey, you know what, there's going to be a lot of people standing in front of me and say, you know, hey, Lord, Lord, and he's going to say, depart from me. One of the responses that people give is, but we did all these things for you. We casted out demons in your name, and we did this in your name, and we did this, and we, you know, I get on a mission trip in your name, and I went to church in your name, and I did all this stuff, and I was part of a youth group, and I went to a Christian camp and everything else, and Jesus is going to go, it doesn't matter. It doesn't matter. Who do you believe in? And I think that's going to be really key for us. Who's your king? It's going to be a good question for us. Who's actually your king? Not what do you believe about all this stuff, but when you think about it, your entire life, who is ruling your life right now? That's the question. And the question is not, do you want someone to rule your life? The question is not going to be, do you want a king? I think some of us think that's the question. It's not. The question is, who or what is your king? Because every single person in this room has a king. Every single one of us. We have a ruler of our lives. Every single person in this room has a master. Every single one of us. And if you can't think about what that master is or who that master is, it's because that master has fooled you into thinking that you're the master. I want that to sink in. If you can't think who or what that master is, it's because that master has fooled you into thinking that you're the master. But none of us are. We're not wired that way. We're all wired to be dependent people, just like the Israelites. Last night we found out, here's kind of the history of the Israelites, that when they were taken out of Egypt, remember that with Moses and everything else, that's when they became a nation, and they go into the promised land, and they had a king. And the king was who? Who? God, right? And the God, if you go through, right before 1 Samuel, you get this book of Judges. It's right before 1 Samuel. And the book of Judges is really how God kind of just revealed himself to the people around them as their king through these people called judges. And it's the judges were people who God just would bring up at certain times that would do a certain thing for God or on behalf of the people, or you maybe bring them back to God for, you know, because they forgot about following him. And then those judges would basically kind of ride off into the sunset. So it was kind of different. Now here in 1 Samuel, we have the last judge, which is actually Samuel, played by that Selah in the presentation that you're going to be seeing throughout the week. That's Samuel. He was the last judge. And when he got to the end of his life in chapter 8 is when the people started saying, we want things to be different now. And it's when they go up to him and say, hey, man, we want a king. Look at let's just start with verse 4. It says, so all the elders of Israel gathered together and came to Samuel at Ramah. They said to him, you're old and your sons don't walk in your ways. I mean, you're going to die pretty soon. Your sons, they're bad people. We don't want them to be judges over us. He goes, they said, now appoint a king to lead us, such as all the other nations have. So they go to him and say, we need a king. They actually fell for it too. They thought they didn't have a king. But they did. Everybody has a king. And they actually had the right king. And they didn't even recognize it. And they had this God as a king. And Samuel knew that. Man, you're saying you want a king? You already have a king. And we know what they meant, though. They wanted a flesh and blood king like all the other nations had. No other nations, nobody else around them was following God. They were following their own, just other people. Other people that were kings. And they said, man, we just want to be like that. Man, how much do we keep on fighting against like these guys, just trying to just be like everybody else? We just want to be accepted. We just want to fit in. We want to be able to be in a group, something, somehow. And so we want to take on what they also take on. And these guys want to do the same thing as the other nations. And then it says in verse 6, look what it says. But when they said, give us a king to lead us, this displeased Samuel. So he prayed to the Lord. And the Lord told him, listen to all that the people are saying to you. And God says this. I just see the heart of God. It's not you that they have rejected, but they've rejected me as their king. It's almost like he's saying, you know what? I've been through this before. They're not rejected. I've been rejected. I'm used to it. Don't worry, Samuel. It's not you. It's me. Wow. Because they rejected me as king. Now, what's interesting is that I didn't see the people say that they rejected God as king. Did they come to Samuel and say, we don't want God to be our king anymore? Is that what they said? They didn't say that. They just said, we want another king too. What's interesting is that you can only have one. You can only have one. And in saying we want another king, they were rejecting the first one. And it says, God says in verse 8, says, as they have done from the day I brought them out of Egypt until this day, forsaking me and serving other gods, so they are doing to you. I've been through this before. Now listen to them, but warn them solemnly and let them know what the king who will reign over them will do. Let them know what they're really getting into. Rejecting me as king and wanting another king. Look what he says. Look, this is crazy, you guys. Verse 10. Look, just kind of imagine if you were in this group of people. Samuel told all the words of the Lord to the people who were asking him for a king. He said, this is what the king who will reign over you will do. Oh, okay, tell us what this new king will do. He will take your sons and make them serve him
with chariots and horses, and they will run in front of his chariots. He's going to take your kids and put them in danger in front of his chariots. So they're the first people that get hit with a line of fire from the enemy. That's what he's going to do with your kids. And then it says, look what it says in verse 12. Some he will assign to be commanders of thousands and commanders of fifties. That looks like a good thing. Hey, he's going to make some of your kids commanders. Guys, the first people that the enemy looks for to kill are the commanders. It's the most dangerous job there is. Do you understand? He's going to make your kids be the commanders. Not him, your kids. And it says, and others he will use to plow his ground and reap his harvest. And still others to make weapons of war and equipment for his chariots. He's going to take your children and make them into child labor. That's what he's going to do. He will, verse 13, he will take your daughters to be perfumers and cooks and bakers. He's going to take them. He can take your sons, put them in the battle. He's going to take your daughters and put them into service to be his servants. Verse 14, he will take the best of your fields and vineyards and olive groves and give them to his attendants. He's going to take the best fields that you have. He's going to take the best of your stuff. Verse 15, he will take a tenth of your grain and of your vintage and give it to his officials and attendants. So he's going to tax you. Then it says in verse 16, your men servants and your maid servants and the best of your cattle, the best of your cattle and donkeys, he will take for his own use. And the first part of verse 17, he will take a tenth of your flocks. He's going to take the best of your land. He's going to take the best of your crops. He's going to take the best of your cattle and your livestock. He's going to take all of that. And he's going to take your kids, and he's going to do all of this stuff, and he's going to use you, and he's going to use your kids. And then the last thing he says is this. Look, do you see what it says at the end of verse 17? He will take a tenth of your flocks, and you yourselves will become his what? Slaves. And you yourself, you're going to become his slaves. He's going to become your master. And I go, wow. And then look at verse 18. It says, when that day comes, you will cry out for relief from the king you have chosen, and the Lord will not answer you in that day. He's going to make you. And if you decide this, there's going to come a day when you're going to regret this decision. And when you do, God is going to say, tough luck. You made your decision. Did I say anything that the king would do that was good? I mean, not one thing. And I would think that after this, that the people would have said, like, oh, man, now that you put it that way, maybe, okay, well, let's not have him. You know what? Let's do something else. Look what it says. But the people refused to listen to Samuel. No, they said. We want a king over us. Two reasons. Then we will be like all the other nations. With a king, the second thing, a king to lead us and go before us and fight our battles. Now, we understand, okay, we get it, we're all blah, 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 all these bad things, okay, whatever. But he's going to give us what we want right now. And we'll be like everybody else. And I don't know about you, but I think these guys are idiots. Any of you think that? These guys are so stupid. You know, who in the world would do that? And then, you guys, all of a sudden it comes to me, and like maybe it's going to come to you. We're just like them. We're just like them. We also have this king. He's always been there. He's always been available to be our king. And it's God himself. And here he is being our king, and yet we go, but I don't want him to be our king. I don't want him to be my king. I want to be like everybody else. And the world around us doesn't have God as their king. And it's weird. And I don't fit in when I have God as my king. I fit in when I don't have God as my king. And so even though we've been told that with God's not your king, this other king will take everything from you and enslave you, we still say, that's okay, because this other king will still give me what I want right now. and I'll be like everybody else. Are we really that different? Some of us, man, God brought you here this week just so you could understand and maybe see the king that you actually have and what that king is actually doing to you. As I said before, it's not a question of whether you want a king. The question is, who is your king? And I'm going to give you another truth that we're going to look at tonight, and you're going to see it. You only have two choices. You only have two choices. Either God is your king, and you're going, I have accepted him as my king, or this other king called sin is your king. And sin does everything that this king that Samuel warned the people of, he does all of that. Takes things from you, takes the best out of you, enslaves you, but gives you what you want in the moment. And you can be like everybody else who also has sin as their king. Is that what we really want? We're going to talk about that king tonight. But what about that first king? Why do we reject this king who actually is way better than any other master we could ever have? If you go to the next page, Samuel brings it up again. Just turn the page to chapter 10. Samuel reminds them again, hey, do you understand this king that you're not having? And you replace it with a king that's way inferior. No matter what is mastering our lives, you guys, if it's not God, it's inferior. Look what he says. Samuel summoned the people of Israel in verse 17 of chapter 10. Samuel summoned the people of Israel to the Lord at Mizpah and said to them, this is what the Lord, the God of Israel, says. I brought Israel up out of Egypt, and I delivered you from the power of Egypt and all the kingdoms that oppressed you. In other words, he's saying, do you understand this king that you're rejecting has all this power? Power to even defeat the strongest nation that there ever was. This God, who is your king, who wants to be your king, has way more power than any other human king could have. That's what he's reminding them. He's the one that was able to defeat something else that had all the power, which means God's the one who really has all the power. Do you understand that? And then he says this in verse 19, but you have now rejected your God, who saves you out of all of your calamities and your distresses. Do you understand who this God is? He's the one that can get you through any kind of calamity you have. I don't know what you think of when you think about the word calamity or distress, but I think of those times that I have no idea what to do. All those times that everything going around me and I go, I do not know what I'm supposed to be doing here, where I'm supposed to be going. And God says, I do. Not only do I have all the power to do whatever needs to be done and rescue from whatever needs to be rescued from, I have all of this power, but I also have all of this wisdom. I understand all of the calamities that you have. I understand the answers to all of the calamities that you have and all the distresses that are in your life, the things that are stressing you out that you have no control of and you have no answer to, God has the answer to. He says, do you understand who you're saying no to? So just this morning, you guys, would you understand, if God is not your king, I just want you to understand, who are you saying no to? The one with all power. The one with all wisdom. And yet here I am, and when I need power, I go to people who have just as much power or less power than me. Is that weird or what? I go to a culture that doesn't have any power at all to give me my answers. And talk about wisdom. I go to the culture to give me wisdom on how to live my life. I go to my friends for wisdom. I look in the mirror and I give myself my own wisdom. I think this is what I should do. Like as if I have a lot of wisdom. And put aside the being that has existed forever, who created me, who knows everything about everything. I put him aside for my wisdom. For the wisdom of my friends, for the wisdom of my culture and the world around me. Isn't that crazy? We're not any different than these guys. And then turn one more page, you guys. In chapter 12, Samuel actually goes to him one more time and says, do you guys understand who you're rejecting to be a king? And all he does is he prays to God for a thunderstorm. That's all he does. God, will you just send a thunderstorm during this time of the year that there's never, ever going to be a thunderstorm? And God does it. And at that moment is when all the people went, what are we doing? Saul can't muster up a thunderstorm. Like, all of a sudden they're thinking, like, whoa, what are we doing? We have this king who really doesn't have the power, who can't really do everything. And we rejected the one who can do everything. And at that moment is when they go, what am I doing? Just like there's certain moments in our lives where we go, what am I doing? Why am I following this way of life? Why am I following the culture? Why am I following this stuff? Why am I following myself when really I have no idea what's really going on? I'm going to be honest. I'm just guessing. My friends are guessing and my culture is guessing. What am I doing? And they finally get it. Like maybe some of us have gotten it and we know that we rejected God and we know that we put him aside a long time ago, but we also are thinking this. We're thinking, but I remember what he said. That if you decide to go after another king and you come whining to me about it later on because you discovered it wasn't the best thing to do, what is God going to say? Tough luck. You made your decision. Remember, that's what he said would happen. But look at this in chapter 12. Starting up with verse 19, this is right after the thunderstorm. And the people all said to Samuel, pray to the Lord your God for your servants so that we will not die. For we have added to all our sins the evil of asking for a king. They said, oh man, what have we done? Look at verse 20. I would have thought that Samuel would say, and Samuel replied, tough luck. You guys made your bed, now you got to sleep in it. You made your decision, now you better live with it. He doesn't say that. He says, don't be afraid, Samuel replied. And he doesn't say, it's not a big deal. He says, you have done all of this evil. You have. You made some really bad choices. Done some dumb stuff. You've decided to reject God. But he says, yet do not turn away from the Lord, but serve the Lord with all your heart. Do not turn away after useless idols, all these other things that can be king. They can do you no good, nor can they rescue you because they are useless. Compared to God, they can't do anything. But I love verse 22. He says, because, if I was the people, I'd be like, what do you mean? We have another chance? And he says, yeah. Verse 22, for the sake of his great name, the Lord will not reject his people because the Lord was pleased to make you his own. Not only does God have all the power and God has all the wisdom, but God also has all of the care. He has all of the love. Guys, if any of you guys came this week, and I don't know who you are, but you're like, okay, I hear what you're saying, PJ, but I made my decision a long time ago and I can't get out of it. I've rejected God, and you know what? I think he's rejected me. Not true. What's amazing is that God is still there and available to you. He has not rejected you for him being your king. We're all the ones who have walked away from him. And now that if you choose, you guys, this week to say, you know what? I've had enough, and I need to have a change. Would God even accept me back? The answer is yes. Because God will not reject someone who he created like you in order to have a relationship with him, which is what he created all of us for. He will not reject the people that he created for himself. He created you for him. Let that sink in. And maybe you haven't been acting like it, and maybe you rejected that truth. But maybe even this week you're going to go, okay, but do I even have a chance? And the answer is yeah. So the question, you guys, as we go through this week, we're going to find out what that looks like to follow him, what it looks like to be faithful to him. But the question today, just as we're beginning the week, is this. I'm not going to ask you, do you want to have God as your king? I'm not going to ask you, do you want to have a king? Do you want to have a ruler of your life? That's not the question. The question is, right now today, who is ruling your life? What or who is your king? Think about it, because we all have one. And if you can't think of it, it's because the king that you have has fooled you into thinking that you don't have a king? Who or what is your king? And we know who one of the options is. One of the options is God. And would you just think about this? Do I want to have him as my king? The one who has all the power, the one who has all the wisdom, and the one that loves you and created you to actually have him as your king. Just think about it. As you go through this week, we'll keep diving into it. Let me pray for us. Lord, thank you for the revelation this morning that we are maybe more like the people of Israel than we want to admit. And it is humbling. God is so humbling. And God, maybe some of us, we need to just hear this morning to go, what am I doing? I'm just so dumb. Why am I rejecting this one who created me in the image of him to have a relationship with him, and I'm rejecting him for this stuff that is so empty and powerless and can't really give me what I need, but is just giving me what I want right now just so I can be like everybody else. God, that we would just see if we're like the people of Israel. And then, God, that maybe we would do what they did. As we see what's going on, God, that you would just reveal to us who our king is and whether we want to just keep it that way or not. Keep showing us what you want to show us this week as we keep looking into your word. And we thank you for it. In your name, amen.